Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at rte.ie. We did it sooner than normal, earlier than the norm, probably before anybody else. What have you? Did you do it over the weekend? Did you put up the Christmas decorations, the Christmas tree, the lights? People are traditional. They usually wait till the 8th. But we decided, with all the good news about the positive effects that Christmas trees and decorations and lights have on your mental health, that we'd go and do it. So it's up there, the tree and the lights and the baubles. And then I got these pangs of guilt, as you do. What about the electricity if you're going to be working the lights for an extra week? And then I thought to myself, well, they're LED lights. So I looked it up online. This is what goes on in my head. I do apologise. So back in the day, we had normal bulbs with filaments. They call them incandescent bulbs. Now, they use a lot of electricity. By comparison, the LED bulbs that most of us have on our Christmas trees now, if you bought Christmas lights in the last 10, 15 years, they're going to be LED lights. So I'm just looking at it here. So a stringer set of 25 old school bulbs would have used 175 watts back in the day. So if you're running them for 3 full weeks before Christmas and then a week or two afterwards, you'd be clocking it up. You'd be clocking it up. And with the price of electricity, you know, you'd probably be switching them off early. Compare that to a stringer set of LED bulbs, 25 bulbs, 2.2 watts. So we're talking 1/80th or thereabouts of the old school bulbs. So you'd want to be having an awful lot of LED bulbs on the tree and outside the house before you start clocking up any sort of money on your energy costs. So that's reassuring. That's reassuring. So that's nice. And already the mood has lifted. The elves on the shelves have done 4 shifts already, and they're writing letters this year, and they're insisting. For example, the first day I arrived, there was no decorations. So it wasn't a threatening letter now, but it was sort of passive aggressive. It was like, we've one word for you, decorations. We can't exist without baubles and lights and tinsels. That was the way it went. So we had to act on that. That's one of the reasons we put up the lights early. Anyway, let us know what you were doing and if you discovered any mice when you were taking the decorations out of the shed or down from the attic. 51551ray@rte.ie. While you're doing that, I must remind you about our big Christmas thank you. And we'll be doing this as in from this day next week. We've been doing it for years and years and years. And it's an opportunity for you to say thank you to somebody in your life. We call it the big Christmas thank you. So somebody has helped you out throughout the year, or even throughout your lifetime. It could be a parent, mother, father. It could be a sister or brother. It could be a daughter, a son. It could be an auntie and uncle, a friend, a neighbour, a work colleague. Somebody just you feel deserves a very public and big thank you. So what you do is you send us an email to ray@rte.ie. Tell us as much about this person as you can. And of course, the reasons why you think they should be thanked on national airwaves for something they've done for you over the year or years. For example, just to get you going and get you thinking, last year Carol thanked her lovely dad, Matt, who did everything for everyone without looking for anything for himself. One of those selfless people. That was Dad Matt. And Marie wanted to show her gratitude for her husband, Barry. Barry became a stay-at-home carer for their son. And then there was Adrian, who surprised her friend, Dorina, who she called her angel on earth. And Teresa, who wanted to repay one of the million Jer's kindness as she helped her through her cancer treatment. So they're the type of ones that we featured last year on our big Christmas thank you. It'll be different this year. ray@rte.ie. And this year will be the biggest Christmas thank yous yet. And it's all thanks to our friends in Super Value. They're helping to share the magic of Christmas with great value, quality Irish festive fare for any Christmas occasion. So get them into us now, ray@rte.ie. Put thank you in the subject line there and get them into us as quick as you can. And we'll start doing them this day week for a week. And just to lay out what happens, so you send us in the email, then we get back onto you, find out a little bit more about the person, then we make sure that they're going to be by a phone while we're on air. You'll help us out. There's a bit of sort of White lying, I suppose, not full on lies. Usually people tell them, be by the phone, I'm going to ring you, or somebody's going to ring you about a delivery or something like that. So they're on the phone, we ring them and we go, hello, you're on national radio, don't say anything, you know. And then we introduce them to you, the person who was emailed about them. They get all surprised and then we read out the email that you've written thanking them. And then we give them a lovely Christmas present and we say a big Christmas thank you. So that's how it works, and it's a lovely Christmassy thing. So if you have somebody in mind that you feel deserves a big Christmas thank you, ray@rte.ie, and put thank you in the subject line. Well done to you too. They were at a glittering ceremony in Washington last night. They received one of America's highest cultural accolades. You would have heard this by now, a Kennedy Center honor. And they've been giving out these honors for more than 40 years for the performing arts. It's an annual ceremony. I think Garth Brooks got one a few years ago, if my memory serves me correctly. Attended by the President of the United States, members of Congress, members of the arts community, Hollywood and Wall Street, glitterati, and they honour five artists usually a year. So last night, U2 were there alongside George Clooney. He was been honoured, Gladys Knight, singer-songwriter Amy Grant, and composer Tanya Leon. And here's Sean Penn, who read the citation for you two before they got their honour. Sean.
So fitting at this time in human history that America tonight bestows its highest creative honour in the creative realm upon these four scrappy Dublin punks. The scrappiest band of musical poets ever to come down the right side drive pike to remind America and the world of its best self.
He's very emotional, is Sean. He's a friend of the band, I'd say. And then Eddie Vedder, him of Pearl Jam fame, did a version of a U2 song. And he knocked it out of the park. Yeah! Sean Whelan was there for RTÉ News and he told a very funny story on Morning Ireland about his cameraman tripping up and literally landing at Bono's feet before they got an interview with him. They also got an interview with George Clooney and they introduced themselves as Irish television, because that's the way you get an interview, you know. And George Clooney's response was, where's the booze? Ah, come on, George, you can do better than that. Surely we mean more to you than booze. They've replaced the old sort of leprechaun, be gorra, be gosh, top of the morning to you, with the booze thing. And I think we should move on from that, shouldn't we? Isn't it terrible that when you mention Ireland to a global Hollywood star, that the first thing he says is booze? And I know what you're saying. We're responsible for that, because every time a dignitary comes into the country, what do we put in their hand? A pint of the black stuff. We need to get over that. We really do. We should be embarrassed. I think we should be embarrassed by that. But anyway, well done to George as well on that. And while we're over there, I'm talking about people who appear on the telly and on the big screen. Sad to see Bob McGrath, who was one of the original Sesame Street cast members, has died at the age of 90. That's a good age. And you'd recognise him if you saw him. He was there right from the beginning. So Bob McGrath, he played Bob Johnson, just to keep it straightforward. He was there when it first premiered in 1969, and he became known as the friendly neighbour to numerous characters, including Big Bird, Oscar the Grouch, Bert and Ernie, Cookie Monster, Grover and Elmo, all the greats. He made his final appearance on Sesame Street back in 2017, so only 5 years ago when he was 85. He survived by his wife Anne Logan Sperry and five children. We have a lovely clip here of Bob in conversation with Mr. Johnson, who was one of these recurring characters. I think he was a customer in various places. Anyway, Bob and Mr. Johnson, here we go.
You know, there are all kinds of interesting people that live right around your neighborhood, like, oh, the postman and the policeman.
Hey, did you order these groceries here?
Oh, hi there. Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
Yeah, these are your groceries.
Have you got everything I ordered?
No.
Why don't we do that song about the people in your neighborhood?
Well, I'd rather not, actually.
Oh, come on, it's a nice song.
Okay, but you start off.
All right, I'll start off. Well, now, who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? Say, who are the people neighborhood. The people that you meet each day.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, all together now this Monday afternoon.
Sunny day, sleeping up.
Now that clip and that song gives me warm, fuzzy feelings. Lovely memories of my childhood.
Everything's A-OK.
Simpler times.
Neighbors there, that's where we meet. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
And Bob, R.I.P. Also R.I.P. to Top of the Pops on Christmas Day. It's been going for 57 years, but the BBC has decided no more Top of the Pops on Christmas Day. It would have been part of people's Christmas Day viewing. They used to have Christmas Day specials and New Year's specials after they axed it on a weekly basis. But a source told us on BBC bosses felt the cost involved in creating a one-off show like this were too high to justify. Creating the studio and bringing together a string of artists to perform for just this one programme required a disproportionate amount of resources. But it will be seen as the sad end of an era by millions of Brits, I suppose Irish people as well, who saw it as Christmas Day must watch along with the Queen's speech. Now, that wouldn't be a must watch for us, but Top of the Pops maybe. So that's a sign of the times, a sign of the times. And of course, one song that would have got an airing on loads of Christmas days on that Top of the Pops would have been Do They Know It's Christmas? And there's a clip doing the rounds. Somebody has, using modern technology, separated Phil Collins' drums. He played the drums on Do They Know It's Christmas from the vocal. And no surprise, it's pretty genius drumming from the man who gave us that drum roll in the air tonight. So you'll hear the song and then you'll hear just the drums and then the song and then just the drums again. And this is the genius of Phil Collins. There he is. Come on, Phil. Boy George. What a driving drum beat there. You forget, you see, that it's driven on by Phil Collins' drums. That's that there. It's doing the rounds on video there. We mentioned on Friday about Shane O'Brien. Shane died in a car accident while working in South Africa for the UN. And his cousin, Kieran, in memory of his best friend and cousin, Shane, did a charity event yesterday. It started at 3 o'clock on Sunday morning and he ran 10 lengths of every GAA pitch in Fermanagh, along with the two pitches at the school where his late cousin Shane attended. And we said we'd let you know how he got on, and they got back on and said, just letting you know that the event was unbelievable. And Kieran says, I was overwhelmed with the response, almost €15,000 raised already and still climbing. And he sent us a lovely picture. He says, this captures way more than I can explain. The final pitch at my hometown of Beleek in County Fermanagh, number 24 pitch. I'm feeling it today. And in on the pitch, the people who were there, SOB, which would have been Shane's initials, Shane O'Brien, and they also marked out with bodies the number 10, which was his short number when he played for the local GAA pitch. So well done to everybody there. And idonate.ie fundraiser / Kieran Smith, spelt the old way, CIARANSMITH. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. We've had ours up for 2 weeks, Ray, earlier than ever, but feel great every time we come down the stairs and smell the real tree. It does lift the spirit, says Dee. And I bought timer Christmas lights with batteries. The lights last 7 hours a day and the battery lasts 3 or 4 weeks, says Gabriel. We've timers on ours as well. I think if you can stretch to a timer, it's important because then you don't have to worry about switching them off at night, etc., etc. Now, we'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first a bit of the Blades. They're a bit like Santa and the elves on the shelves. They come out every Christmas and for their Christmas gig at the Academy. And this year is Friday the 16th of December, which is this Friday week, isn't it? And tickets are available from Ticketmaster. I know they've thousands of fans all over the country and they just need to be reminded about that gig. Now, we better tell you about our Reel in the Ears quiz. We are looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And this week, it's a two-night stay for two people in one of the Ainua Collection's gorgeous four-star hotels. You can kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, taste the magic in the Tullamore Court Hotel, relax in the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan or the Fairways in Dundalk or any one of the Radisson Blue hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone to enjoy. From overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the Ainua Collection. Ainua.ie, that's Ainua.ie, Ainua.ie. Okay, here's your qualifying question on this Monday afternoon. Which BBC music chart show will apparently not be shown this Christmas Day for the first time in 57 years? Which BBC music chart show will apparently not be shown this Christmas Day for the first time in 57 years? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, anonymous texter Bob McGrath from Sesame Street was my first crush at the age of 3. That's early enough to be having a crush, isn't it? The Blades are one of the best Irish bands ever. Heading to our annual Christmas gig on the 16th, says Anthony. Now, there was a big hoo-ha this year about the live crib. Cancelled. It was announced that it wouldn't be returning to the Mansion House this year. And then a new location was sourced in St. Stephen's Green in Dublin City. It'll be back this Thursday. And online is the farmer who supplies the animals, Fionn Sherlock. It's just Stephen's Green, not St. Stephen's Green. I'm getting mixed up with St. Stephen's Day. Hello, Fionn.
Ray, how's it going? How are you? All right?
Good, good. So you're back in business. Great news.
Yeah, delighted then. To be honest with you, to be going ahead this year, it was looking like it wasn't going to go ahead this year, which was disappointing after coming through a couple of years of COVID restrictions. But we're delighted to be back in business now and all ready to go for this Thursday, the 8th of December.
And your family has been supplying the animals for the live crib for a long time. How long?
Yeah, so they've been supplying the animals since 1995, so 27 years. Like, I myself was only born in 96, so that'll just put it into perspective how long it's going on. So it's been in the family quite a while. Yeah.
It's older than you, Fionn. The
it's older than me,
older
exactly.
Than you. Right, okay. So when it was cancelled originally, how did you get the news?
Yeah, so look, we always like get a call from the IFA every year just to go through the motions about getting set up every year for the for the crib and just kind of make contact with them. And just my mom got a phone call and I was shocked when she told me, like, you know, after, as I mentioned, going through the 2 years of the COVID restrictions, I only had said to my mom about 2 weeks before we got the call there that, like, you know, nothing will stop us this year, like with the restrictions kind of easing back a touch, like, so yeah, no, I was surprised, but thankfully it's going ahead, like.
So the OPW and the IFA got together and made sure it was going to happen. So you just describe what happens every day for you, because it's only what a few hundred yards up the way from the Mansion House, isn't it? Where it's, the new location is. It sounds like there's somebody there, but I tell you what, we'll take a commercial break and see if we can get Fionn back up on the line. Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Fionn Sherlock, whose family have been providing the animals for the live crib in Dublin for years, should be back on the line. Hello, Fionn. No. No, Fionn. No, Fionn. Tá sé ma. Níl sé an seo. Níl sé an sin either. So, Leo joins us in studio. How are you doing, Leo?
I'm so happy
you're here. We have to... Leo... Just do what you do there and let people listen to this. Have a listen to this for a moment and then we'll talk to Leo. Right, here we go. Okay. Have a listen to this. This will bring you back. I'm waiting for a ding. Ah, there you go. Hey, Liam Malloy, you're welcome to the studio. Thanks so much for coming in with your typewriter.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So vintagetypewriters.ie. You are a typewriter enthusiast.
I certainly am, yes. And I'm an enthusiast and more.
And yeah. So you've turned a hobby into a job.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. That's it. It's been a lifelong hobby of mine. And just in the last few months, I've decided to take it on and make it a career.
Yeah. Tell us about your first typewriter.
My first typewriter?
Yeah.
First typewriter I got in 1991. I was going to bring it in, but I bought this one in instead. It was a gift from my best friend, Brian. He gave me this black box that looked like a miniature suitcase. I had no idea what was in it. And I just opened it up. It was a 1940s Royal Quiet Deluxe. And it was just a beautiful typewriter. I fancied myself a bit of a writer in my youth. And I just fell in love with it since then. And then I became an on and off collector sporadically through my 20s and 30s. And it was a hobby that went dormant after that. For a few while, whatever life got in the way, as it does. And it just rekindled it about 4 or 5 years ago. I just started collecting them again and more in the mind of learning about them, tinkering with them, repairing them, getting to know the different models, the different makes, the different eras. And it's just one of those things that grows and evolves like any hobby, I suppose.
How many have you got at home now?
My personal collection, I try and keep that below 20.
Okay.
But I have quite a few shelves full in my garage that are ready to be restored for sale.
Yeah. So this is what you've self-taught yourself to.
Yeah, well, it's
to rejuvenate them.
Yeah, there aren't any
refurbish them.
There aren't any courses in in typewriter repair. Maybe I'll start one. So yeah, it's just something that each typewriter that I've had, and I've had dozens and dozens and dozens over the years, and each one presents its own challenge. So each one is like a little lesson that I have to learn, figure something out.
Yeah.
Each time I work on one,
it's sort of the vinyl of writing, is it?
I guess so. It's kind of like the film of photography.
Yes.
You know, and it's
the slow cooking of food.
The slow cooking, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's something that I think there's a nostalgia that attracts people to them. But there's also something interesting that I find children get attracted to them very quickly. Anytime a child's in the house, they go straight for the typewriter and they want to look at it, you know. And it's not nostalgia for them.
Because no, of course, because they have no memory of it.
Exactly. Yes, it's nostalgia for old people like me, because I learned how to type on a typewriter. But children, they like to see that the type bars moving and the keys, and they hear the sound and they see the letters
the movement,
on the paper.
Yes.
And it's just fascinating. So
action, consequence, something,
exactly.
Result. And action, consequence, result.
Exactly. It's very organic and real and deliberate.
Of course, it's the same with if there's a piano anywhere, nobody can pass by a piano without doing a clink, clink.
Maybe go with chopsticks. Yeah, yeah.
It's the same with a typewriter, isn't it?
It is. It's like, all right.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, it works.
It's like, surprise, what's that button do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it says A. The likelihood is that it's going to be an A. Yeah. I'm got brought right back, because I would have been at the end of the typewriting era. Tippex, a lot of Tippex involved, because I wasn't very good at typewriting.
Yeah, I often find typewriters that come through my hands are riddled with Tippex. Cursed liquid.
so name the parts. There's the keys, obviously.
The keys on the keyboard.
Yeah.
Which we would more often refer to as the key tops. And there is the type bar. The type bar is connected to the type slug. And the type slug is the actual piece of metal there that has the letter or the character. That strikes the ribbon.
Yeah.
Which is raised by the ribbon vibrator.
Right.
It strikes the paper on the platen. The platen is the cylindrical tube that the paper rolls around. That's in the carriage.
Yes.
The carriage just brings the platen back and forth like that. And those are
the main
key
things.
They're the main elements.
Just name the thing where the letters are again. I'd never heard that word before.
The type bar.
Yes, no, and then on top of it, the type bar
is the type slug.
Slug, right. So on the slug, you would have the lowercase and the capital.
Exactly,
of each
letter,
yes.
Or the character and the number.
Yes, yes.
So
you'll
have
yes.
like the question mark or the ampersand.
So when you settings. Press down the shift, it...
When you shift that, it goes to either the capital or the other character above the numbers.
Yes, yeah.
It has the QWERTY keyboard has been going since the early 1900s, 1905 or
Can
something.
You remember why it was put in place in the first place? No.
The most common
theory
is that the letters that are most commonly used in combination are separated so they don't jam the two type bars together.
Ah, right.
So it decreases the chance of...
Now that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the type writer jamming up.
Which means that the QWERTY isn't fit for purpose when it comes to a computer.
It's not relevant.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
yeah, but it became the standard and it has been.
Yeah.
You know, computers were just an evolution of the typewriter.
Yeah.
So everybody's used to that, so...
So if we went back and looked at what the best way to lay out the keyboard was, it wouldn't be the QWERTY. Well, different concerns, because they were worried about the things sticking together as opposed to anything else. Yeah.
That's the most common theory.
Yeah,
I wasn't
yeah.
around when they were deciding yeah, that. Yeah. But
Okay, so now I suppose it's like photography that we can take any number of pictures, so we can type any number of emails and just send them off, and there's sort of a disposable nature about it, whereas when you had to sit down on a typewriter and you had your piece of paper... You have to pay more attention.
You have to, yeah. You can't kind of... Like half of the typing we do now on a computer, or even texting now, it practically spells for you. Because
yes.
we don't pay attention to how accurately we're spelling because the phone just corrects it as
predictive
we go.
Predictive text, yeah.
Yeah, predictive text in that. But with a typewriter, it's more deliberate, it's more focused. Like you said, action, cause, consequence.
Yeah.
You know, you have to focus. It demands that you focus on that and nothing else.
Yeah.
And there's no distractions either. Like a computer is constantly distracting you.
You type, obviously. What do you type on a daily basis?
I spend a lot of time these days testing typewriters. So I spend a lot of time, every time I finish one, before I sign off on it, I'll road test it, so to speak, for half an hour, 45 minutes. So I'll type song lyrics. I'll listen to a radio show and try and keep up with the people talking.
Right.
Try and be like it.
It could be a
like a course stenographer.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm never really that fast. I type my shopping list
right.
every day.
Okay.
I started doing that during the pandemic so I could go in and out and not be distracted while I'm shopping. So I just got what I needed and something I continued to do.
You have a hint of Michael Flatley about you, which suggests that you're American... Irish. No, the accent, the combination of American and Irish.
It is, yeah. I grew up in America.
Yes.
I grew up in middle America.
Aha, right.
And I moved here in 93 when I was about 24 years old. So.
Yeah, what I'm saying?
The mix
of the two accents together.
It's a hybrid.
Yeah, it's a hybrid, yeah. And you alluded there that you've only come to it as a full-time job recently and life sort of took over and forced your hand on that one.
A little bit, yeah. That's a good way to put it, I suppose. I've put it a lot of ways, but not like that. But yeah, about a year ago, I had an aneurysm that I was not aware of burst, and I had a full-on brain hemorrhage, which resulted in the neurologist suggesting that I take a year off to recover because I nearly didn't see 2022. So it just made me reassess what was going on in my life. You know, I had a very stressful job, so I decided to quit the job with the help of my wife. Well, with the support of, or the encouragement, or the insistence of.
Or all of the above.
All of the above. Yeah. So we just decided that this hobby that I always, you know, I always joked, you know, if I could make a living working on typewriters, then, you know, that would be the dream.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, like you said, my hand was forced, so I decided, well, I'll just try it.
And it's working out.
It's working out. It's early days,
yeah.
You know.
Who's in the market for a refurbished old typewriter?
Sorry to cut you off. I was surprised at that because I thought, like myself, young aspiring writers would be the target market. But I get a lot of inquiries from parents who are looking for typewriters for their children. Their children are requesting a vintage typewriter. I'm talking about children between the ages of 9 and 12, primarily. And I don't know where it's coming from, but the parents are excited. I'm enthusiastic. It's not a screen. It's not, you know, they're not looking for a phone. They want a vintage typewriter to type on. Someone because they write stories, and they want a typewriter to write stories on. Some of them have pen pals and they send letters. You know, all that stuff is just, it's refreshing to hear that there's another generation looking for them. But there's also writers. I have retired journalists who want to have a typewriter because that's what they learned on. It's a huge mix because, and we're all individuals, and there's so many different types of typewriters, which is why I don't have an online shop as such, because I like to get to know somebody, what they want out of the typewriter, and find the right typewriter that
suits them.
You
have to explain
them.
That a little bit now.
So, you have to explain that.
Yeah, as in, what do you want out of your typewriter?
Well, if somebody says, I want a typewriter because I want to, you know, some people use it for arts and crafts, some people use it to, someone recently bought a typewriter for me to fix because they use it to make labels for their essential oils and products. So I would just say, you know, a lot of us, the aesthetics, like this is a pre-war machine, you know, things made before 1940s.
What's the name of it?
This is a Remington Portable.
Right.
Actually, funnily enough, there is a three-part series called Beyond the Bullets on RTE recently. This makes a cameo. It was hired as a prop. Right. So they wanted a period-specific typewriter. So this is a 1920s Remington, so...
That's part of your private collection, so it's not for sale.
This one isn't for sale?
Yes.
This is my private collection, yes.
Okay. Everything has a price, or does it
well,
not?
Well, you know, everything's for sale, some people would say. But as this isn't listed.
Right, okay. So. And what sort of price are we talking about?
Like the pre-war machines like this generally would be anywhere from 380. And then it's how long a piece of string is. It can go up. It depends on collectability. They tend to be more pricey because there's a lot more involved getting them working again. They're rarer. There's just more difficulties in them. And then you have mid-century machines and onwards, post-war. In the 50s, different materials started to become more common, like aluminium, plastics, and mass production. Typewriters became... a standard for college students, so there's
a lot more of them around.
There was a different use for them, demand for them at that time.
Yeah.
So they would be less, they would be, you know, be 260 to 350.
They're still making typewriters. Google says they are, anyway.
There is one company that's making them. I think it's a company out of China. It's called We Are Memory Keepers, but within the typosphere and typewriter people, they don't...
Now, let's see what they're
saying. They don't
rate much. Liam Malloy, vintage typewriter collector and vintagetypewriters.ie if you want to find out more about Leo. I have my grandfather's old Royal typewriter. He was a reporter for The Examiner. Very fast at shorthand, so he would be asked to take down Sean Lamassa's speeches and would type them up when he got home and give Lamassa and other politicians their hard copy of their speeches. How times have changed. I read when I was doing a little bit of research about this item, Leo, that in Hollywood... Before they had photocopiers or Gestetner machines, they would have a pool of typists all typing the script.
Yeah, because you couldn't photocopy it, so you needed 50 copies.
50
so
copies, there'd be, 50 there'd typists. Be
50 typists, one typing one page each, and then at the end of the day you'd have 50 copies of it.
Hi Ray and Leo, I'm doing a house clearance. My parents are sadly deceased. If that gentleman's interested, I have a 1970s typewriter for free. This is Paul in Leixlip.
Oh, get in touch.
Yeah. I got a lovely Lilliput typewriter from my father for my 9th birthday. It came in a lovely brown case. I loved it. Got many a sore finger from catching between the keys, says Maura. Be careful, Maura. And does Leo know that Tom Hanks collects typewriters?
Yes, I'm aware of Tom Hanks' collection. Yeah, he's...
That'd be pretty impressive, I would imagine.
I'd say it is, yeah. I think it's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
He probably has more space than me.
Yeah. I wonder what his story with typewriters is. I wonder how he started his collection. It'd be interesting to know.
I'd say like anyone else's, you know, it's just a fascination with that.
The physicality of it.
The physicality of it, yeah.
I love the sound of the typewriter while I'm typing fast. Very therapeutic. I wrote a page from my life on my typewriter during the first lockdown, says Keith. My son, now 28, came home from kindergarten, age 3, raving about a great machine they let him play with, like a computer, but with paper in it.
Great.
That's not a great description. We dragged an old typewriter down from the attic. Yeah, that's it. I'm a journalist, Claire in Copenhagen. So there you go. Give us another bit there. Give us another bit of the live sound. Live. Brilliant. Now, if you can spot what Leo has typed there, we'll give you a prize. So you made a full recovery from the aneurysm?
Yeah, I made a full recovery. I'm just very lucky.
Right.
Just, you know, count my lucky stars. That's, you know, when you get a second lease of life, you decide.
And the easing off of the stressful career, have you felt that? Does it make a difference?
Hugely.
Right.
Yeah. Don't miss it at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you getting physical manifestations of stress?
Well, I don't think anyone's immune to physical manifestations of stress. Right, fair enough. But it's like a stone in your shoe. You just get so used to it, you don't think it's a...
Yes, yeah.
You don't think it's stress. It's just
the way life is. Well, I suppose that's why I asked the initial question. So you now know it's gone. So
I do know it's gone.
You're aware that the stone is gone from your shoe.
Which is great.
It feels good.
Yeah. Oh, it certainly does. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful life you have now, doing what you're converting your hobby into a job.
Yeah.
Isn't that the dream?
Yeah. So I guess you say I'm living the dream.
Yeah. VintageTypewriters.ie. And there's a lovely little video you made with Brian O'Brien from the Irish Times there in the Irish Times.
Very talented Brian O'Brien. Yeah.
And it's lovely. And it shows you in your workshop fixing typewriters, doing what you do, and all the various typewriters there as well. Leo, lovely to meet you. Thanks so much for coming.
Nice to meet you.
Mind yourself.
Thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, third time lucky, Fionn Sherlock and his family have been providing the animals for the live cribs since 1995. And we are finding it difficult to get him on a phone line from Enniskerry. Hello, Fionn.
Ray, how's it going? No,
there you
lucky.
Go. There you go. Yeah, so I was just telling him there, 1995, it's been moved from the Mansion House to Stephen's Green. It's opening on Thursday. Name the animals that you're providing for the live crib.
Yeah, so every year we have the goat and the donkey. Daisy and Lily the goat have been doing the crib for the last 10 years, and then we have two lambs every year. We pick off two lambs, so Peter and Paul are the two lambs that are coming in this year.
Right, okay. And it must be lovely to see people's faces when they see the live crib.
Oh, look, it's great. And as I was only saying to someone there, like, I work as an assistant manager here in Enniscorthy in County Wexford, but like for myself, like, I live in the countryside, I can look outside there and see cattle and sheep in the field, but for a lot of people in Dublin there, they wouldn't get to see that, like, and the crib is great for, like, even from an educational purpose, like, the amount of people that think the donkey is actually a horse would surprise you, like, you know.
Or disappoint you, one or the other.
But it's not, look, it's great for the children of Dublin, and even for grown-ups, like, it never surprises me how many people that it draws every year, and I'm expecting big crowds this year, especially with the publicity it's got over the last couple of weeks.
Yes, well, more than ever before. And the animal welfare part of it, because that's what people have been discussing, I suppose. They're your animals. How well are they treated?
Yes. Look, as I say myself, the animals are probably treated better than I treat myself. Like, you know, like we only have a small farm ourselves. Like, they're more like pets than kind of farm animals, like, you know. Like my dad is a blacksmith by trade, like he done the donkey's feet there yesterday, like they're always paired back every couple of weeks to keep them right, and like, you know, the animals are always inspected by the vet there once a year to get a checkup, like to get worm dosed and stuff, so like they're all very well looked after.
And they're brought in and out every day, is that it?
Yes, oh definitely, yeah, no, the animals never stay in the crib, they never have, like they're always brought in every morning. And they're brought home every evening and they stay at home in the farm in the Skerry and they're brought back in the next day.
Are you and your family staying out of the political hoo-ha that's going on?
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. And at the end of the day, as I always say, everyone is entitled to their own opinion. I know the Lord Mayor didn't want to have animals this year and she's entitled to her own opinion. Like, we're just delighted that we can have the live animal crib in somewhere in Dublin this year.
Yeah. So it's Stephen's Green. Where exactly?
It's in the summer house there in St. Stephen's Green. It's a protected structure, so they're creating a crib there over the next... They're actually constructing it tomorrow and the next day there, so that's where it's going to take place in Stephen's Green.
Right, and because the park, the green, closes, you'll be out of there by what time each day?
Yeah, so basically that's a very good point there, Ray. So the crib won't run as long. It normally would have run from 11 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the evening when it was outside the Mansion House. But the times this year with the OPW and St. Stephen's Green, we'll be starting from 10:30 and finishing at 3:30 because the park closes at 4 o'clock.
Okay, so it's Lily the goat, Daisy the donkey, they're old sweats, and then the new kids, well, the new lambs
Peter
on town.
Peter and Paul.
Yeah, two. Okay, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Fionn, sorry about the technology. Thanks for talking to us.
No,
good luck
problem
on everything.
At all.
See you, Fionn. Happy Christmas. Bye now. Bye. And now, around this time of the year, I remember this from my childhood in school, the annuals, the Sugra, the Spree, the Seamsa, and the Sonnus, and they arrive into the school, and you could smell the new book. And you'd be very excited. They've been going for over 50 years. And the editor of the Folans, Sugra, Spree, Seamsa and Sonnus Annuals, Lynn Fitzpatrick, joins me in studio. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're a bit like Leo in that you got your dream job because you grew up with the annuals as well, did you?
I did, yeah. I can remember getting them in school and like the excitement, you know, you'd always look forward to them. And I never would have thought in a million years that I'd ever be working on them.
Yeah, brilliant.
Like if I went back and said that to my child self now, I don't think she'd believe me whatsoever. It's really lovely. I love working on the annuals. Yeah. You know, it's so fun.
Just remind people who don't know about them what they are.
Well, they're really a tradition. Like you said, they Folan celebrated 50 years in 2020 of the annuals. So they're like packed full of like puzzles, quizzes, articles, interviews. And then what's really nice is we also invite readers, like budding writers, to send in poetry. So we have a poetry competition, a story competition. We've got Pets Corner, which is like all the photos of kids with their pets.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of, I suppose they're designed very much with the child in mind. And I suppose when I took over them about 7 years ago, I actually went into Folan's library and went through all the really old ones. And I tried to like get kind of a sense of what they were about. And I guess it was really important to me to be true to what they are, not to change them. But then at the same time, we have to modernise them and make sure they're relevant for kids today. Yeah. So it's kind of a mixture.
And that's difficult, isn't it? Relevant for kids today, because when you were consuming them, and definitely when I was consuming them, there was a lot more less competition for children's attention, wasn't there?
No, there really was. Yeah. That's the thing. I suppose like what we have tried to do, I suppose a lot of the primary team in Folans would have kids in primary school, so we talked to them. My nephews, Darren and Evan, have been a great help to me over the years. They were actually, they were Sugra and Spree when I was starting off because they were around infants in first class, and now they're like Seamsa and Sonnus age.
Uh-huh, right.
So all the way up along, the boys have been like so helpful to me with like...
So do the hierarchy of them... So the youngest is for...
Yeah, so Sugra is for infants, so junior and senior infants. And then, like, with Sugra, I suppose the puzzles would be tailored for that age group. So
we'd
like to join the dots, colouring, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Spree then would be for first and second, so getting a little bit more advanced with the puzzles. And then we have, like, two articles always in Spree as well. So I think this year we did Turtles and Lego. And then with Seamsa is for third and fourth. So then with Seamsa, we actually got feedback from the kids. We sent out questions a couple of years ago, and they said that they actually enjoyed reading the articles more. So we'd kind of decrease the amount of puzzles and increase the amount of articles. And then Sonnus is for fifth and sixth. So then we've loads of articles in that. We also always interview people that we think the kids would be interested in. So we've interviewed loads of people over the years, like people in sports or people in creative arts or writers or, you know.
And with all that competition from, you know, computers and everything else, why do you think they've maintained their popularity?
There's a couple of things. Like, I think there's a huge nostalgia piece with the annuals because I think my parents and grandparents can kind of remember getting them in some cases. And then, so I think there's like a lot of excitement among like the parents about it. And then I think as well, they're quite like, they're very high quality because we're very, we put a lot of thought and consideration into what we put into them. And I think, I suppose maybe a lot of annuals kids would get would be more from the UK, whereas these are very, they're in Ireland, Irish.
Yeah.
So I suppose maybe that gives them a little bit, sets them apart. And I think it's the fact that we try to, I suppose we very much have the child at the centre of it when we're planning it. And then I suppose we try and make the kids part of it too with their photos and their own original writing and stuff, you know. So I think maybe, I just think, I don't know, I always get a very positive vibe about the annuals whenever I...
Yeah, it's old, they're old school though. They're old school. Let's see if you're paying attention when you were editing it, because I'm going to the Sonnus one, okay? Fact or fiction? Fact or fiction? Lynn Fitzpatrick, editor of the Folans annuals. Adults have more bones than children have. Fact or fiction?
Fiction, I think.
Fiction, yes.
Children have
more bones. Okay. The directors of the film Despicable Me wrote their own language for the Minions. Fact or fiction?
That's fact, yeah.
It is fact, yes. Well done. Let's see, what else have we got here? The right side of the brain controls the right side of the body. Fact or fiction?
No, fiction. It's the opposite.
It is the opposite. Well done. You were paying attention.
Well, I kind of wrote that, so I should remember. It's a really bad sign if I don't.
And you know, the articles, as you say, are becoming more and more popular. And you have an article here in Sunnis on fast fashion.
Mm.
And it's great to see that children of that age are interested in the environment and the future of their planet.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think we're always trying to strike that balance between, you know, we want to cover, like, bring about awareness because the annuals have a huge reach. But at the same time, then you want to balance it with fun. So that's why myself and the primary team always at the beginning around September, October for the following year, like, we start going, okay, let's brainstorm. What are the ideas? And then we bounce them around and see what we think will work. And that's kind of what we do.
My favourite are the Spot the Difference.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, there's so many of them. It's brilliant. It's brilliant because they're drawn ones. There's photographs.
Yeah. There's a nice variety of them. Yeah, they're lovely.
Nice variety. Do you ever get complaints that people can't spot the 10 differences?
I don't know. No. I haven't anyway. No.
No, because it must be difficult to get it right, you know. But they're my favourite. They're my favourite. Creepiest bugs from around the world. They're pretty gruesome.
Yep.
And you've, the brilliant thing about the interview is a lot of brilliant new Irish athletes. Razadat Adelecki is there, an interview with her, which is brilliant, and there's loads of good stuff there, and a free Christmas pen, great prizes to be won in all the annuals as well. And they've arrived in schools, haven't they?
Yeah, all the schools have their annuals now, so
a lot of excitement around that. Lynn, thanks so much for coming in.
That's great, thank you.
Now
Ray.
That they're out, you can take the rest of the year off. Okay?
Exactly. Thanks a million, Ray. Thank you.
Now Anish Doshi, now in the Preskelton and Oaktala, Mary Nihulawan. Good Marion, thank you very much. 51551 RadRT.e. The typewriter guy was great. Leo Malloy was his name. I'm definitely going to look into buying the kids typewriters for Christmas, says John. VintageTypewriters.ie, that's where you'll find Leo. And Anne-Marie from Holy Family National School in Temple Tuohy in County Tipperary has been on. We started giving out our annuals today. The excitement was unreal from the classes. Fair play to Lynn. She's so enthusiastic, says Anne-Marie from the Holy Family National School, Temple Tuohy in Tipperary. Hit the button. There you go. Boom. Now, we've two quizzers standing by and we have a prize, and it's a two-night stay in one of the iNua Collection's gorgeous four-star hotels. They're all over the country. Kilkenny Chic Hibernian Hotel, Tullamore Court Hotel, the Hillgrove Hotel, the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk, or any one of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There is something for everyone, and you can find out where you can stay, what you can buy, if it's a voucher you want, iNua.ie, iNua.ie. Des Boogie's in Tyrrelstown in Dublin. How are you doing, Des?
How are you, Ray? How's it going?
Not too bad. Are the decorations up in your house?
Definitely not.
No. Right.
No. No.
When?
When? The day before Christmas Eve, 23rd, 2024, yeah.
Is that when you do it?
Sounds good enough for me.
Is it? Yeah, right.
I don't do it. My wife does it because I just couldn't be bothered, Ray. Got into it at all.
Bah humbug.
Yeah. It comes from 20 years of working behind the bar, right?
I see. Sorry. Yeah, that's
me,
completely,
you know?
Understandable, Des. Sorry about that.
Yeah. You know, people turn into not nice people,
yes,
in the month of December.
I know.
When
okay.
They get the free drink on them, you know.
Yeah, your association with Christmas isn't a good one.
In previous years, but in the last few, it's been okay. It's been better, you know. So
Yeah, right.
Maybe I will get the decorations up early, you know.
You might. And you never know, it could change you. You know, and you might shed that association that you have, you know, that negative association that you have with Christmas.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
good point.
And you could become this, you know, new man, Des.
Yeah, okay, right.
You're not convinced, right? Okay. So your wife Mary is responsible for putting up the decoration. Who else is at home?
She loves Christmas. Roy is at home, he's 15-year-old. He's doing his junior sergeant here.
Right, okay, brilliant. What are the plans for Christmas?
We're going to Donegal, to a place called Kilmacrenan, just the far side of Letterkenny.
Nice.
On the 23rd, and we're back on the 27th or 28th. We haven't really decided yet. My wife is a friend living up there, Tanya Lee Corinne.
Right.
She lives up there. She's enjoying her life up there. So we're going up to walk the beaches and climb the mountains and stuff like that, you know.
Lovely, lovely. That sounds nice.
It's a nice part of the world, yeah.
You're up against Peggy Higgins from Claremorris. How are you doing, Peggy?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Are you at work? Do you work from home or what's the story?
I work from home, but I've just finished for the day.
Great. Great. You've clocked off.
Yes.
You've clocked off.
Yes.
You've turned to yourself and you said, it's time to finish up there, Peggy, and you've allowed yourself to finish. It's great. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. I was doing a little bit of Christmas shopping.
How did that go for you?
I'm very light in the pocket at the minute, but it's all right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something nice, though, about buying for other people, I think, isn't it? Yeah, makes you feel good eventually, I think. And where are you at with the Christmas decorations?
On Thursday, hopefully.
Yes, which is the traditional day, isn't it? December the 8th.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Right, and where are they? In the shed, up in the attic, or...?
In the attic.
In the attic, yeah. I remember years ago, got loads of reports of, you know, mice and stuff. That's, they find it nice to get in among the tinsel and just be careful. Just be careful when you go.
Well, I'll be sending himself up, so be careful.
Well, you definitely will be now. You definitely will be now. Yeah. Okay, it's Peggy plays Des. Three questions each, lads. And if you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most on points is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Okay, good luck to you both. Here we go. So, Des, the year is 2002 and we're starting on the television. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
I'll start with a short clip, right?
Fair enough. This British TV show first hit our screens in 2002. The presenters talk about everything car-related and test-drive cars. Can you name it?
This is a car programme. There will be no cushions.
Well...
Yes, Freddie Flintoff is doing it now.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the name. It's not coming to me.
Take your time.
That was Jeremy Clarkson.
It was Jeremy Clarkson, it was, yeah. Yeah.
What's the name of it? Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond did it.
Yes, they did, yeah. They did, yeah. They did.
And James May as well.
Yes, he did. Oh, no, you have so much detail.
No, I can't. It's just not coming to me. Right.
Isn't it?
No, hang on, let me think for 1 second. I'm sorry for delaying it.
What's it called?
No, it's not coming to you.
Top Gear, you had everything.
Top Gear,
everything.
Yeah.
Top Gear.
Yeah, I know, well.
There you go.
I just couldn't think of it.
Right, hard luck on that one. Peggy.
Yes.
TV from 2002. Are you going to go long or short?
Short, please.
Short. This British reality series first aired in 2002. Have a listen, see if you can tell us the name of it.
So listen, now, we do have the result.
Yes.
Okay. But before we reveal it...
Any ideas?
In 2002?
Yes.
I'm gone blank.
Gone blank.
I was thinking Big Brother, but no.
No. No, you...
No.
No.
That's... Get me out of here.
Yeah. Des spotted it there. I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. He's right. They're the voices of Ant and Dec there. So it's hard to believe it's gone for 21 years. Anyway, tough luck on both of you in the first question. So it's a clean slate as we go into question number two for you, Des. It's music from 2002. Do you want to go long or short?
A short, please, right?
Short. This song was one of the biggest hits of 2002. Can you name the song or the singer?
Oh dear, I've heard it, I know it, just can't think of the name of it.
Name of the singer will do me.
Gabrielle?
No, Avril Lavigne.
No.
Complicated. Okay.
Yeah.
Peggy, music from 2002, what do you want to do?
A long, please.
A long one, another big hit from 2002. Can you name the song or the singer? Making my way downtown, walking fast, faces pass and I'm
homebound. Downtown?
No.
Oh, Sugar.
Sugar is right. 1,000 miles. Vanessa Carlton.
Right. I knew it. I could see her in my head. Never mind.
Yeah. Okay, this is going great. Okay. And both of you were close on. Anyway, so it's down to the wire then. News and current affairs, Des, from 2002. You can go long, get a point, but then it opens the door for Peggy. She can go short and get two and win. Or you can go short and hopefully get it right and then put pressure on Peggy. What do you want to do?
I go short and hope that my brain opens up a bit.
Okay, rightio. Well, it is Monday. It is Monday, Des. In the 2002 Irish general election, which political party's campaign slogan was "A lot done, more to do"? And here is your clue by way of a short clip.
The polls actually have ranged during the campaign from 37 to 51.
That's an easy one, that one.
Go on.
Bertie Ahern and Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, a lot done, more to do. That was the Fianna Fáil leader, Bertie Ahern, and you get 2 points for that, which does
put... didn't do right.
Say again?
Does it you didn't do it?
yeah, well, that's politics for you. Peggy, so you're under pressure now. Des is on two. If you go short and get it right, you'll be on two as well, and it brings us to a tie-break question.
I go short.
Yes, you sort of have to do that, don't you? In 2002, what was officially introduced in 12 countries, including Ireland? Here is your short clip by way of a clue.
Banks and automatic teller machines were busier than usual, with many customers lining up to exchange their old notes.
The euro. That's it. That's the answer. It's not more complicated than that. The euro is the correct answer. You get 2 points for that. Okay, so it's a draw. Two each, which brings us on, which is probably fair enough. It brings us on to the tiebreak question. We asked you this question before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners at home. And whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to walk from Kylemore Avenue in County Galway to Glendalough Cathedral in County Wicklow? You're laughing there, Peggy. We'll get to you in a moment.
I give a stupid answer.
No, hold on now. You never know. Des, yeah. What did you guess?
12 hours, and it wasn't just a guess. I based it on driving as well. You know, how fast you walk, you know. It was a guesstimate.
Well, it's 284 kilometres.
Yeah, right, from
Kylemore Abbey, yeah, Glendalough. And your guesstimate is 12 hours. And what about you, Peggy?
I put 20 hours.
Yeah. Can I say, both of you are way off the mark. So it's a matter of which of you is closest to it, been way off them, if you know what I mean. So the correct answer is 58 hours.
Oh.
Yeah. So Des, you're way off the market. So too are you, Peggy, but you're closer to it. So Peggy, you're today's winner. Des, about that. Des, we're going to... I enjoyed our chat, Des, and we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show Keep Cup.
That's top prize, right?
Yeah, it is a top prize. Limited edition, absolutely. Des, and you might consider the decorations, and happy Christmas in advance. Okay, Des, good luck. See you now. Bye, bye, bye.
Well done. Happy Christmas. See you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, bye. Peggy!
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, you're off to one of the iNewa collection gorgeous 4-star hotels. They're all over the country. iNewa.ie. You can go there and see what's in store for you.
Thank you so much.
Well done. Good talking to you. See you, Peggy.
Thank
bye
you.
Now. Bye. 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 Bye.
The
bye.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope joins us in studio. We'll be speaking to him in a moment. But first, a bit of this. Automata, Liberty Bell on RTE Radio 1. Pricewatch at RTE.ie if you want Conor Pope to grapple with any of your consumer issues. Good afternoon, Conor.
Hey, Ray. How are you getting on?
Not too bad. You have your own traditions.
I do. Every Christmas, I tot up the cost of Christmas for the Irish Times and I work out how much it's going to cost. And every year for like 15 years, the price has been broadly speaking in line. You know, it's always, you know, around 1500 euros, 1600 euros. And I never go overboard because there's no point in trying to chase a headline and trying to write a story about Christmas is going to cost 4000 euros or whatever it might be. So I just price the kind of typical things that, you know, a family might buy a turkey, a ham, some mince pies, afternoon tea, biscuits, whatever it might be. Mm. And then I go to the food, booze. And again, I don't go overboard with the booze. I don't go overboard with the nights out. So when I price the night out, it's two adults going out twice over the Christmas period, each of them having four pints, okay, or the equivalent.
All right.
on the entire night out. Now, I don't think that's wildly excessive by Irish standards at
all.
And then every year I tot up the prices. And like every year it surprises me because there's all these studies suggesting that Irish households are set to spend €800 or Irish households are set to spend €1,100. But when you actually break it down and you look at it on a really micro level, the actual cost of Christmas is an awful lot higher than that. And the terrible thing is that an awful lot of people are going to be putting themselves into significant financial debt, because it's all well and good for me and you to talk about how Christmas might cost €2,000 when you factor in everything from the tree to the Christmas pajamas to the food to the booze to all that stuff. But an awful lot of people don't have €2,000. And like a huge number of people who are listening to the show don't have €2,000. But they will be financially stretched and they'll go, you know, put debt on their credit cards, they'll go to their credit unions, heaven forbid, they'll go to money lenders, and it puts people into serious financial difficulties for the new year. So there's a serious side to the article, as well as the whole, oh my God, lads, look how much we're going to spend. And there's no answer to it, because that's just how Irish people are, and it's how Irish people have been since I started working for the Irish Times.
But you're saying, even in the middle of a cost of living crisis, that it hasn't gone up much since last year?
No, it has actually, I think last year the price for everything was around €1,600.
Yes.
And I think now the price is over €2,000.
Okay.
So it has gone up a good 20%.
Right.
But last year was slightly different in that last year and the year before last, there was lockdowns, and then there was all the anxiety over Omicron. So you didn't have the same office parties, and you didn't have the same need maybe to buy clothes.
What do we spend most on?
Well, you know, the food shopping would be a big thing. And when you just price the food that you'd have for like kind of maybe Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, St. Stephen's Day, and maybe the day after St. Stephen's Day, you're looking at like £250, whatever it might be, and then maybe another £150 on the big shop that you might do in, you know, to keep you going until the new year. So that's like £400 or £500 on food. And then if you just allocate it, two adults and two kids, probably €300 would be maybe for some people an overestimation for presents. Maybe for some people it would be an underestimation. Now, the good news is that Santa Claus takes care of a lot of the presents for kids, so parents don't have to worry about that. But if you just allow €300 for presents for two adults and two kids, and then you have the socialising costs, if you say, OK, we'll allow €200 or €300, and it's this kind of chipping away. And it all really does add up. And it does put a burden on people. And I'd love the answer. I'd love to know what we could do to lessen that burden. I mean, maybe we set our expectations too high, and maybe we're chasing this illusory notion of a perfect Christmas. So we go out and we spend money trying to create this perfect Christmas, because that's what we're told to expect. But there's no such thing as a perfect Christmas.
I know,
it's nonsense.
But we're being presented with images of perfect
100%.
Christmas from the 1st of probably November.
For all our lives we've been told. And people then get really stressed about whether or not they've got the perfect sprouts or the perfect roast potatoes, or whether or not their
perfectly
turkey
bronzed
looks
turkey.
Just
yes.
right.
Yeah.
And like ultimately, and I think if the pandemic period taught us nothing, ultimately what Christmas should be about is getting together with the people you care about most and having a little bit of downtime. And like, without wanting to be all preachy about it, like that shouldn't be costing €2,000. But that's what people end up spending.
And people will remember the company and the crack as opposed to the bronze turkey.
100%. Like in June, no one's going, God, remember that turkey we had in December? Wasn't it just amazing?
Well, the only story is epic failure, isn't it, when it comes to a turkey?
Oh, yeah. So all my memories of childhood is my dad dropping the turkey on the kitchen floor and then like the 10-second rule applying. But it takes a lot longer than 10 seconds to get a turkey off the floor. But like, you know, it never did us any harm.
Yeah, so it's there if you want to read it online. This one came in PriceWatch@RTE.ie. I was in Chicago on a J1 visa during the summer and was unable to use my phone when I first landed. I tried to switch on my data quickly to get directions. However, it was unable to load on my phone and I soon switched it off. I went to a US phone provider the following day and purchased a US SIM. When I arrived back in Ireland in late August, I received an astronomical bill from 3 Ireland. It was €2,808.16. The person I first spoke to, a member of the 3 customer service team, offered me 50% off my bill. I refused to pay this. The next person I was dealing with was a different person. They offered me 30% off my phone bill straight away. I then received an email from the company Intrum, that my case had been forwarded to them as I had not paid the amount of money to 3. I simply am not in a position to pay this fee as a student.
Now, Intrum, by the way, would be a debt collection agency.
Okay.
So you have 3 Mobile, then you have
outsourced by 3.
Exactly.
Right.
So I think there's a couple of things about this. First of all, I think an awful lot of people who maybe aren't as old as you and I, Ray, didn't grow up in the era of absolutely swinging charges that attach to roaming outside of this country. Now, when like 20 years ago, if you had the temerity to make a 3-minute call home from from Paris, you'd be charged a fiver for it. Or if you made a call for 3 or 4 minutes from Malta, you'd be charged a tenner. And all of these mobile phone operators all over Europe were just making up charges and they were imposing them. So you'd be paying 20, 30, 50 a euro for a text message if you were doing it overseas. And it was just absolutely outlandish. But thanks to the good office of the European Commission, they really put manners on telecoms operators all over Europe. And they just said, lads, within the European Union, you cannot have roaming charges. And then over a period of 5, 6, 7 years, as we've talked about on your shows over many, many years, they just got rid of roaming charges. So an awful lot of people have just grown up not knowing that roaming charges are a thing. So I would put this particular listener into that camp. Student, maybe 20 years old, probably has had her mobile phone since she was maybe 14, 15. 13, whatever. So it would never have lived in an era of roaming charges, right? So it's worth just bearing that in mind.
The context is important.
So she travels to America. She fiddles around with the mobile phone when she touches down. She tries to use it to see if she can map to where she is going in America. And again, the context is important because you're probably really freaked out. You're in America. You're on your own. You're probably away from your parents for the first time and you're trying to map your location. So, cut her a bit of slack, okay? So that's the context. But anyway, she maintains that she turned off the phone, then she went off and she got an American SIM card and used the American SIM card for the duration of her J1. And by the way, I just want to point out that when I was on my J1, I called home twice. There was no SIM cards when I were a lad. But anyway, she comes home to this absolutely savage bill, and totally freaks out. And what I think is interesting is when she called 3Mobile, they were so very quick to say, we'll give you 50% off. Like 50% off is a fairly massive discount. Like that's what, 1,300 quid? Straight away.
It's 1,400
euros straight away. It's like, we'll let you know. So that I think reflects the kind of how these charges they don't actually bear any relationship to how much 3Mobile paid.
They completely seem completely arbitrary.
For any company, they seem to be. And then when she called back, there was a 30% discount. And then, of course, and again, 3Mobile did what all companies do, is the bill wasn't paid, it wasn't addressed, so they passed on the bill to a debt collection agency. And then the debt collection agency started sending you letters. Now, imagine you're 20 or you're 21, how stressful that might be, because I don't know about this particular person, but it wasn't like, even allowing for the inflation over the last 30 or 40 years, I would never have been able to come up with that kind of cash when
it's
I was a kid.
Money.
It's a lot of money. So what could we do? So I contacted 3Mobile last week, right? And they sent me a statement. They said, on this occasion, the customer received a text message stating that she'd reached her data roaming cap of 50 euros. And then the customer is given the option to remove that limit in order to continue to use the internet while in the USA. And 3 says that she chose to do that. Now, that's why the context is important, because I'd say she was probably maybe not entirely up to speed with
what
she was doing. Yeah. So she chose to do that. And because she's working in a space, or she's living in a space where roaming charges aren't really a thing, we cut her some slack. So 3 said they'd like to remind customers to be aware of usage when roaming and to be familiar with the local rates on arrival at their destination. And that's really important if you're travelling to the United States, or if you're travelling to Australia, or if you're travelling to the Far East, or wherever it might be, because roaming charges are still a real thing. And that's why you've got to be incredibly careful about how you use your phone. But anyway, the bottom line is they liaised with the customer on this, and as a gesture of goodwill, they have removed all the roaming charges. So at least now she doesn't have to worry about the debt collection agency, she doesn't have to worry about the charges. 3Mobile have done the right thing, and hopefully she will have learned that when you're travelling outside of the European Union, take great, great care when it comes to your mobile phone.
2,808 euro and 16 cents doesn't reflect in any way how much it costs 3 to do what they did, what service they provided to her.
And it's the same with all operators, be they in Ireland, be they in the UK. These are the kinds of absolutely savage charges that they impose. And one of the reasons why is they want them to act as a disincentive for people to use their phones overseas like they would use them at home. Because it does come at a cost. It's not completely free to 3Mobile, or it's not completely free to Vodafone,
or
whatever
it
might be.
No, it's not costing them 2,800.
So the charges are more of a disincentive. But when you know the disincentive is there, and when you realise what it will cost you if you just ignore that disincentive, well, then it's going to end up costing you money.
Okay.
But anyway, bottom line is she's going to have a happier Christmas now because of the Ray D'Arcy Show.
And a big whew. thanks very much, Conor. Pricewatch at rte.ie if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues. We'll talk to Conor next Monday. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening. Why isn't that coming? Let's try that again.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.